As the poets say, it sure is raining cats and arcanics out there. On this week's...
Comics of the Atom!
If you don't like cats, you're probably not going to like this book. So let's get back into it. Welcome back to Comics of the Atom. I'm your host, Michael Von Green, and with me as always is Carson Woodard. Carson, how's it going? How you feeling?
I'm just glad I'm not surrounded by cats that are lying all the time or calling me a liar. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. So I have a cat, as you know, Bub, and everybody always asks how that little devil is doing because he likes to bite. Not in a mean way, but yeah, he seems to have a certain attitude that are very, very cat centric. So
he's a fan of cords, isn't he?
Yes, he loves the cords, loves to eat the cords for some reason. So that's every morning now because I'm working from home, right? Go to my desk, got my coffee. He sits on my feet and chews at my cords, and there's nothing I can do. So time to just let it lie. Just all have to buy new cords, I guess, or he'll get shocked. I don't know. Whatever comes first. So yeah, let's get into this. So we're going to, you know, speaking of cats, right? And why we're talking about cats is we're going to be talking about Monstrous. And I think we're going to be probably talking about Monstrous for a little while, at least three or four episodes here. So this is, now we're back to our regular format where we're taking a look at a giant volume. So we're going to do quote unquote book one, which is now out in hardcover. And this is a little different sort of from what we typically do, which is where we look back at, you know, books that, you know, from a few decades ago, like, hey, this has like a huge influence. This is why this book is super important. You know, Monstrous is probably an important book for, you know, a lot of other reasons or different reasons than the previous books that we've talked about, namely because the writer was the first woman. And over, you know, I guess the Eisner Awards have been going for over 30 years. She was the first woman to win Best Writer. So, you know, that's a historical important thing to point that. Yeah, yeah. So when I was looking back at all the awards that they won in 2018, she shares that credit with Tom King for Miracle Men and Batman, I guess, in that same year. So I don't know how often that duality happens with those awards, but. Yeah, so and I think like I've been really enjoying this book. So I had the trade for a while whenever they put out that first trade, and hadn't been following it, unfortunately. But yeah, now that this nice hardcover has been collected, it's like I can see why it just won so many awards. Like it's a really great book. I think years from now, people will talk about this book quite a bit. And you know how it influenced hopefully a bunch of younger creators to go out and do their thing. Yeah, let's just any thoughts or impressions besides the cats before we get into it, Carson?
No, I mean it's funny you mentioned the award stuff. It, unfortunately, comics is still a pretty manly thing in terms yeah. of you know the creators. The writer. So it was a pretty cool idea you came up with. It's like let's try to figure out something that, you know, had an all-female team, and this is pretty much the top candidate. So I can't wait to dig into this and get into this big old hardcover because we coincidentally just both own this giant hardcover, so we may as well just give it a read.
Right. Exactly. So and the woman that we're talking about is Marjorie Liu, who is here from the US. So she's actually, I'm not sure if she was like, you know, where she was born in the US. I know she went to undergrad in Wisconsin or she went to law school or something like that. I was looking up on Wikipedia. She started a fan site when she was in undergrad, called the Wolverine and Jubilee fan site or something like that. So she was a big fan of like the X-Men animated cartoons. And so she read a bunch of comics. You know, she actually went to law school and passed the bar and was doing that and said, you know what? I don't want to do this. I want to write. So she's been, you know, pumping out novels, and then finally broke into comics and did, you know, X-23 and Astonishing X-Men before, you know, partnering with, Sana Takada, who is, a Tokyo based artist in Japan. So they collaborated regionally or across the sea, remotely, that's the word I'm looking for, and created this new IP that's under the Image label called Monstrous. So they had worked together, I guess, previously on X-23, got to know each other doing that, and now have this like amazing book that I tried to look this up because I was like, you know, just like any Image comic now, I just automatically think, oh, there's six issues, or it's gone more than six issues. It's someone has had to sign this up for a TV show, right? So I don't know if that's happening or not. I'm sure there's been conversations, but I think, you know, it would be, someone would be real stupid to pass this one up if HBO or somebody isn't being like, you know, they had the Game of Thrones. I think they should stop making whatever that other Game of Thrones thing is and just make this instead, based on what I've read so far. It has the same level of intrigue and mystery and political divides. So it's pretty awesome. So, you know, Monstrous, very quickly you will be, the first page is very jarring too. So it opens up with the main character here. Micah Half-Wolf. I believe that's how you say her first name, Micah. She's naked. She has this, she's in chains. She has this ominous scar that's in the shape of an eye that's going more vertical or than horizontal. And she's being sold off to, these women. So before we kind of get into the, so what we'd like to do is sort of dive right into the issues. I feel like we're going to have to sort of pedal back a little bit and just talk about this world, because, you know, normally we're like picking up, you know, Batman or, you know, Spider-Man, whoever, right? And most people know who those characters are. They live in the real world. This is all fantasy, right? I think what's really cool about this book is that it's like, it does a great job of like plunging you right into the world. And you're just kind of going to go on this journey of world building. Is that fair to say, Carson? Like, you have to just, like, you almost, like, I actually had to start looking up stuff on a Wikipedia, which reminded me of, like, fantasy novels. If you've read fantasy novels, there's always a glossary of terms. There's always, like, wikis. And it's like, you kind of have to start doing some research in order to understand what this world is.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, as soon as you read the first few pages, like, and with hardcovers, especially ones that I'm reading for the first time, luckily there's sometimes a little blurb on the back, but I usually don't like read the back of the book too much until I get to the end. And maybe, you know, when I turn the hardcover page, I'll take a look at it. But this one I had to, like, after the first couple pages, like, all right, what in the world is going on here? And it says, Micah Half-Wolf lives in a world gripped by war in alternate 1900s Asia, brimming with arcane dangers. So yeah. Right there, like, it is a completely crazy, insane, different premise than anything you've probably read before right out the gate. And luckily, there is beautiful art to assist you in staying with the book and keeping your attention, basically. Because if someone told me, like, hey, you want to read this book on alternate 1900s? And I'd just be like, I don't know about that. But then you introduce this beautiful world, even though that first splash page, like you said, perfect word, very jarring. There's just a lot of beautiful art going on here. And there's almost like, I kept hearing the word steampunk used here, like, to describe their world. I don't know if I really agree or disagree with that. Nah. I can see where people would maybe come up with that, but yeah, I just like the use of magic so far, and obviously the animals are what makes it quite a bit different to me, where you have like these animal human hybrids and talking cats and stuff like that.
I don't know if steampunk is like the correct term that you would use. I get like why people would grasp for that terminology, because maybe they're a little bit unfamiliar with, I think, more about, I think, I mean, it seems very heavily influenced by like turn of the century Japan, right? And there's a lot more fashion to it, right? And that's like Sana Takeda's art style, right? Obviously very manga, focused. As soon as you pick up that page, you'll immediately see that, right? Manga, it looks like manga, but it also has this like nice, and we were kind of talking a little bit before the podcast started, like Final Fantasy 12, you know, like that. It kind of reminds me of that, where it's like this high fashion, which, I, you know, has like, it feels like elements of steampunk in that too, but it's a lot more fantasy, like definitely like there's less, it seems like there's less like steampunk. I imagine there's a lot of gears and a lot of mechanical,
right?
You know, not to say that there is industry in this world, but it's not the main focus or it's not the main driving. It's almost like, I would say this highfalutin societal fantasy, like fantasy fashion is, I don't know what you describe that as. That's what, it, and I was, I made a note early, like get kind of, I was going to talk about it later, but this is a perfect segue. I do feel like even like, I think manga almost does style almost does it. That's definitely what the influence is here. But I would say Takeda's like art style seems very distinct. Even, you know, it seems different. I think too, with the coloring, it just like, she has her own art style that I actually really like.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like I'm picking up a Naruto or Dragon Ball Z thing, and you know very typical manga. It has definitely its own style to it. So the world, I don't know if there's a name for the world, maybe that there's definitely cities and stuff like that, but the quote-unquote known world is occupied by five races. We have humans, we have ancients, we have arcanics, which is what Half-Wolf is, which is a half breed of humans and ancients. And then we have cats, just cats. That's a race that can talk and have multiple tails. And then we have the old gods. So one of the cool things about this book too, is that like towards the end of certain issues, they'll have some kind of world building info dump, sometimes taught to you by Professor Tam Tam, a cat, or it'll just, which I think that's all how it's always is. He's either talking to you directly or it's more of like an infographic. So that's a pretty, that's an important thing to know, that those like five races exist. The other big important thing to know is that within this world, so the Arcanics have been at, you know, have been warring with different factions of humans, specifically, this religious group of witches known as, I'm going to butcher this probably, but the Kamea, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but just know that they're, hey, there's these zealot religious women that actually harvest the arcanic species. So they kill them and they release something called lilium. And it's some type of energy, some type of magical property that they're using to, you know, explore their own, like try to gain power, right? Try to, you start to figure out what they want that for. I don't think it's really spelled out clearly other than, you know, they're doing this because they can, you know, gain powers and have control over like, you know, the world and the human race. And, you know, they hate the other factions and they want to destroy them. So this is where the harvesting of this power comes from.
Yeah, to me, it seems like there's almost a cannibalistic trait to this witch type of character. They're always talking about how hungry they are, and you kind of get to see our main character do a little bit of, you know, consuming of spirit later. I think that's what she was doing, at least.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like I said, I only read the first issue so far, which it was a doozy of a 70-page issue. So
yeah, that's important to note, is that the other
dump so far.
Right. The other weird thing about sort of this first episode as we're getting into this series is that we're only going to cover the first issue. And like you said, 70 pages is triple size. So there's a lot to cover and there's a lot to kind of to digest here as we're getting the story going. And the cool thing about this story too, as you continue to read the series, it's just, Micah is trying to figure out herself, like her past. She doesn't remember what happened or why she has what we'll eventually learn her power is and how she got that. And you're constantly introduced to new characters that definitely have their own motivations or might have something, you know, a lot darker inside themselves that we're unaware of at this time. So there's just this constant unraveling of new things, which is pretty exciting. Not everybody's motivations are what they, you can't take anybody's word at face value. So there's a lot of unreliable narration going on between all these different characters, which makes it pretty exciting. The other cool thing too, is that this world is like, women are the main focused. There's a lot of different women, people of color. They are all the ruling classes in all these different races. So that's pretty cool. Except I guess the cats and the old gods, I'm not sure if there's a gender neutrality there or there's no gender to be had. Well, I guess the cats, that's not true, but it seems like the cats are more male focused, but whereas the Arcanics, ancients and humans are all women led. And like we kind of alluded to earlier, this style is just so distinct. It reminds me, if you've ever read Lone Wolf and Cub, kind of has that manga feel to it, I think. And, you know, like sort of like Final Fantasy 12 and even a little bit of Miyazaki, I think, you know, the films, right? Like those, you know, Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke. There's definitely, I feel like, some influence into that. So yeah, let's get right back into it. So we, like I said, we had that jarring first page, and so she's being sold to these witches, you know, in order for her energy to be harvested, which it can only be harvested either after they cut off a limb or they kill them. So, and she's apparently only 17 years old, and then there's other smaller Arcanics. And she, what makes her unique though, is that typically, I guess in this world, an Arcanic, you'll notice that they are Arcanic right away because they have like fox ears or they have tails. They look, you know, they're half human, half creature. So these other kids that are being sold off in the auction as well, one's like a little fox, one's like a little cyclops kid, one has wings. So there's a lot of crossbreeding going on. So it's kind of horrific, like right out of the gate, right? Like, wow, they are going to murder these kids and just harvest their energy. Like, that's just something that you accept right away. And one of the characters that is doing that is Sophia. So she, you know, takes these. So she buys these, you know, quote unquote slaves, and they get locked up in a dungeon. So in this book too, in this first issue, it's a non-linear narrative. So we're in the present, but then we're continually going back to the past. Not that long ago, like a month ago, we're starting to understand Half-Wolf's journey and how she got where she is now. So she actually put herself in this position. So there's a bunch of things that we learn through her flashbacks. And that's where we're introduced to two characters, one of her childhood friends, but then we're also introduced to this cat. And Carson, what have we learned about this cat?
It's calling out liars.
Yeah.
Lying cats. I'm marked out huge for this cat.
So Micah is traveling to the city with her friend Tuya, another Arcanic, a cat stumbles upon their camp, and she starts talking to the cat, who is a necromancer, which we'll learn later about. His name is Ren, but he says liar. And I made the note, like, and you just said it, like, yeah, is this like lion cat reference from Saga? It seems like too much on the nose, but I don't know if there's like historically some Japan thing with cats and lying. Maybe that has something to do with it. I have no idea. I have to Google that. I need to figure that out if that's a thing. Cats are deceitful. They seem to be up to their own agendas all the time. You know, they're not like dogs where they're just like, you know, following you everywhere you go. The cat only comes to you when it needs something, like food. So the other important thing to know about this flashback scene with not only Ren, who's going to become a main character here very quickly, Micah also has a hunger that she needs to feed. Right, Carson?
Yeah, this part was pretty crazy, or where she randomly gets attacked by, I don't know if she's just little or the hyenas are giant, but it looks like she gets attacked by some pretty big hyenas, like a little wolf pack type here. And she just annihilates them. And the most disturbing part about this scene is the actual like narration part where she goes, when we were slaves and starving, we once ate the contents of a dead boy's stomach. We said it wasn't like eating the boy, but now I know the truth. It was. So not only is she doing this, like, well, I don't know if it's like she's defending herself or she kind of summoned them so she could feast on them or what, but there's just a lot of disturbing imagery of like she looks like she's eating the heart of one of these hyenas. And yeah, it's just a pretty crazy scene. And you see this, she starts crying in the middle of all of it too. So really strange.
Yeah, I think that's sort of some of the brilliance between with Marjorie Liu's like writing is that she doesn't shy around. Like there is no shyness in this book. It like immediately plunges you into a very difficult story to not only have to pick up like you know, like all these concepts, but like, you know, it's a very violent, it's a very dark you know, story. Like, you know, it's this complicated tale so far about, you know, what does it mean to be human or the dehumanization of other people, you know, otherness, you know, and her survival and trying to figure out what she truly is. And that's why she's currently in the situation that she is now. She knows that this person will lead her to another individual that will hopefully expose her to these questions that she has about her childhood. So what we'll eventually learn is that her mother is dead. She can't remember this time. She knows that she survived this great battle. That's referenced here pretty early on, a battle in Constantine that happened years ago between the humans and the Arcanics. There was this big explosion, killed a bunch of people, something like that. I'm not quite sure that once the details on that are a little fuzzy to me still, but you know, she knows something happened. She knows that she could possibly be responsible for that. And she's missing an arm because of that too. That's the other thing that's probably important is that she's half her left arm is missing. That's an important detail that can't
be missed. There's a lot of missing limbs in this book.
Yeah. They're not shy. Right. So, you know, they're in that dungeon. And so this is where, yeah, the writing is just like fantastic. It's dark. It's creepy. I love it. There's also like the, you know, Sana's artwork too, in the dungeons. It has that real creepy guy that starts banging his head on the jail cell and like blood is, you know, gushing out and stuff like that. And it's just, it's got this cool, just influence, historical classical Japanese art style of like demons and monsters. So that's happening at the same time. There's this fat woman guard that's just, you know, tasering, Half Wolf. And also these two other guards, are dragging this little Cyclops boy away to be, chopped up and harvested. It is some dark shit. I mean, we just did that Halloween episode, but man, let's talk about horror comics. Like this is pretty, some horrific, situations.
For some reason, the dumb thought that went through my head during this whole jail scene, and I have no idea why, but I kept thinking about the jail from Twin Peaks, like the local police station. Oh, God. How there's always like some random weird crap going on when you go to the jail cells. And the main one that came up that I thought about was like when that dirtbag cop from the last season gets locked up and there's like this like zombie dude basically who's in one of the cells with no explanation whatsoever. And just like this weird guy with no hands who just starts bashing his own brains in on the bars.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very David. Yeah. It's very David Lynchian. I think, you know, he will just throw stuff in just to throw stuff in because he thinks it's wild and crazy. I could see that. That's a good way to maybe kind of talk about this book. Is like, if you're into David Lynch, maybe you'll if you're into David Lynch, Final Fantasy and cats, you'll like this book. So as this is happening too, we're being introduced to all these characters. There was one, like, there's a couple other characters that I'm skipping over, that I'll try to get back to. There's just so many, and everyone that you've kind of met so far will be reintroduced later. There was another man that was a slave in the opening pages. He'll eventually come back. And besides Sophia, right? Sophia is her name. Yes. There's another Arcanist that's with her too. It's like Athea, I think is her name. So these two are not Arcanists. I'm sorry. Kamaya, whatever, the witches. Once again, this is like, yeah, like it's like, I feel like, cause I'm reading the Doom books too. It's like, oh my God, I gotta learn all this like fantasy language that, and it's so hard to keep it track of it. But that's what this is. Like, I think if anybody out there that likes that stuff, you would really like this book. It's pretty awesome. So there's another character in the dungeon cells. That's a little fox girl. Her name is Kippa. She's going to be a main character as well. So as we're getting these flashbacks, we're getting this backstory filled in. Sophia's experimenting on this little Cyclops boy. We learn a little bit more about Sophia's mother. There's some conversation about how, you know, she needs to, you know, come to this council because there's talk of war and, you know, that she's needed and that may not happen. That's a conversation happened between Sophia and the other witch that I mentioned earlier, as they're poorly just harvesting this poor boy. But this older, fatter woman is, abusing Half-Wolf in her cage. And then, you know, she doesn't know what happens, but her power is unleashed, you know, kills this guard woman. And then in the process frees all the other slaves. So she, you know, is sort of passed out trying to regain her strength because she's, this is sort of part of her plan. As part of the flashback too, she was trying to figure out how to unlock a locked pad cell, or like, you know, a lock that would go on a cell, as she was talking to her friend in the camp. It's sort of unclear, like, does she figure it out, or does the thing inside of her figure it out? But that's, you know, the latter kind of prevails itself here. Yeah, so that happens, and Kippa decides to follow Micah here to Sophia's lab. And then Sophia, so, you know, as that's happening too, Half-Wolf doesn't see Kippa follow her, but so as this unfolds, right, she's just trying to figure out where Sophia's mom is, because it's revealed now, I believe, or it will hear soon, that once again, I apologize, this is a lot of stuff, a lot of like exposition we have to kind of get through. She needs to find Sophia's mother, Yvette, who knew her mother, because, and the reason why she knows that is because she has this picture with her as a young kid with her mother and Yvette. So she knows that the Yvette knows something about her mother. So in the process trying to figure that out, she burns Sophia alive. And then she attacks Atina, the other witch. So this is an important thing, Carson. I don't know if you caught this. Mm-hmm. I only caught it when I went back and looked at it again, because this character will pop up. Atina will pop up again. I want to say Athena, but it's like, I don't know. There's a panel where she sniffs. And then she sticks a dagger in her shoulder. So that sniff panel, I'll tell you, is pretty important. It's going to come back into play.
Interesting.
So yeah. So the little fox girl sees her do this. And by the way, this art is like, I think really like the fire. I really like the fire coloring in these scenes. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah. It's pretty grotesque. Like, you know, there's going to be a head roll here soon. This is like a Joe Bob thing. It's like he could easily, you know, head roll kung fu, fire burning kung fu, cyclop boy harvesting kung fu. I don't know, or fu or whatever he says. So at this point, right now, she's on her way to confront this other woman, Sophia's mom, Yvette, and try to figure out her answers. So Carson, I just talked quite a bit. where are you at with so this right
I
now?
I read Marjorie use X-23 stuff, but I get a huge X-23 vibe from this character.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where Takeda seems to almost draw this character very similar to X-23, kind of, in my opinion. It's just a character, and I don't, with a mysterious past who isn't completely clear on her origin, and neither are we, obviously. And she just kind of seems to be going on this, I don't know if I want to call it a revenge mission or just I'm on a mission, just don't get in my way. But I definitely got a huge X-23 vibe from this character so far. I don't know if that's just me or what, but there's a little bit of Wolverine in here.
Right, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. It does feel like that quite a bit. The funny thing is like, you know, when she writes X-23, and I don't know if this character is introduced, but did you read the All-New Wolverine comics where... what's her little honey badger like there's like that's what Kip is almost going to become, is like this honey badger type character, which I don't think Lou ever wrote that character, but it's just like there's definitely this, like, I mean, well, look, it goes back to her fan site, right, in undergrad.
Yeah,
Wolverine and Jubilee, right? It's definitely like that that's what the relation, you don't get that right now, but that's definitely what that is going to become. But I think you're spot on with the Wolverine. It just, you know, he's broken out of the glass, adamantium tube, and he's like just killing everybody to find answers about his past. That's exactly what this character is, in a way that I did not think when I was reading it, but now it's like seems so obvious, which is kind of fun. That's really fun. Yeah. So if you like Wolverine, like this is definitely that comic for you. But, you know, speaking of killing stuff, like I said, head rolls. So that's what happens next is Yvette's guards are killed. And so there's a bunch of, you know, exposition about her past and like she's, sort of alluding that she knows things. And, you know, there's just a bunch of like sterile, like very ambiguous or mysterious, you know, narrative happening here that we don't quite get all the answers to. So she sort of tricks Micah into this other room where they have like, she almost has like this Lilium trap, you know, that energy that they harvest from the remains or limbs of Arcanix. And so she's able to defeat that and actually choke out Yvette. And as she's dying, you know, that's the thing too. She also exposes herself in a way Yvette does, like she also has like this demonic, something inside of her is wrong. Like she seems, you know, to wield some other power or form that isn't quite revealed quite yet. But she asks, you know, Half Wolf, can you hear him? What does he say? Alluding to the power that's inside her. So as is happening, Micah, man, I really hope I'm saying her name right. It just seems, I don't like looking at it because Micah, because it's like, oh, that's just very close to my name. But I believe that's right. How you pronounce it. So it has this. So this is one of my favorite pages in this first issue. It's probably so she discovers as she's defeated this woman, a power, you know, this relic kind of draws her in and she opens it up and it's a piece of this mask. But then there's this like this beautiful illustrated one page shot that pretty much just sums up like what this book is about. So there's this literal monstrous thing behind her that's enveloping her as she's holding this mask relic. And it's, you know, it's just flat out telling you like, hey, this is what is inside of this main character. You know, this is the thing that's hidden within her. This is the power that's hidden within her. There's a mystery. We're going to go on this journey together with this character to find that out. But I just thought that was just beautifully illustrated and just like very powerful. And the thing is like, I would say very like Cthulhu-esque. It's like Cthulhu hair with giant eyes is like almost kind of how you would sort of imagine it. So, you know, as they're leaving too, so as I mentioned earlier, Half Wolf has that picture, But then she finds the same picture, only it's completed with these two other characters, this like fish boy and this other woman. And she says, fuck. So that's the thing, too, which is kind of funny. There's this like this book is like style wise. It's just sort of like in a great way, like all over the place. It's not shy about being violent. It's not shy about being provocative. These main characters will easily drop the word fuck. It does feel like a very like kind of Brian K. Vaughan-esque, like something like Saga, right? Where it's just like everything is so unexpected. You don't know like what's going to come next. And so I thought that was just really funny that she's just like, fuck, no, she got some answers, but if anything, she has more questions now than she had answers before. I guess one of the important things is, because it's going to be important for the next issue that we read, is that within this room, too, there was a holding cell with a little arcanic boy. And so him, Kippa, the little fox girl, and her and Half-Wolf escape. And as they're, escaping into the woods, Half-Wolf collapses. And I think this issue, 70 pages, this is how 70 pages ends, which I think is like a good summary of sort of what this book is, it's a fun book. It's a fantastic, fun book. There's panels that cut to the trees. The cat is back. Ren the cat is back. And he says, to quote the poets, we are fucked. And that's how the first issue, triple size issue of Monstrous One ends, almost like a weird Quentin Tarantino movie or something like that. So a lot of mystery, a lot of intrigue going on. Stylistically, this is like a really fantastic looking book. The world, like I said, is like you're just going to have to sort of invest in it, look things up. And that's okay, because I think great fantasy novels and other, books do that. Like they have a world, and we're just going to discover that world as we go along. But there's resources out there where you can start to learn stuff more. Maybe I'd caution not going too deep, because I think it spoils stuff. But man, if you thought that this threw a lot at you, wait until we go over the next like two or three issues. Like it just gets more and more interesting. So Carson, your thoughts here, on this like 70 page extravaganza.
Yeah, holy crap, 70 pages, that was just the first issue. It felt like you read an entire trade's worth of information and action already. It's funny you kept mentioning the parallels to the book Saga, because in that one, I kind of had a similar reading experience where it took me a couple tries to really get into that, just because the world is so dense and they throw a lot at the wall. And you mm-hmm. kind of just have to accept everything that you're given, because that's the universe that Saga is. And right. Here in Monstrous, obviously, you don't really know too much about this world. They kind of tell you it's like, oh, it's an alternate history 1900s. If I didn't read that off the back of the book, I wouldn't have had any semblance or recognition for what timeline they're in. Like, right. It doesn't even seem like, I think you kind of called it pretty good earlier, where it's like, is this Earth? Like, it could very well be for some reason 1900s is just thrown in there, I guess, just because it was, I don't know honestly why you'd even try to put a date on this book, but yeah, like there's a ton in this. There's a lot of questions I have. You kind of mentioned some of these main characters, but a lot of these people were already burned alive, or just a lot of random craps happen to us. I'm curious to see if like these other like witches come back, or if they're done already, or a combination of both, how that's going to work. I'm really curious to see how many more of these old gods we see down the line. Cause there is that one big splash panel,
right,
where you get to see that old god with like multiple like vertical eyes on him. I'm just wondering if that's like a symbol for all of the gods, or that symbolizes one old god.
Yeah, I sort of skipped over that. I didn't mean to, because it's it's some beautiful art, because they're just giant splash pages. Yeah, so also in this world, these ancient gods, it seems like most are quote unquote dead, but their ghosts are alive, and they're just like floating out in the world. It's like Shadow of the Colossus.
Exactly.
Or something like that. That gets a little bit of like Miyazaki like influence. I feel like there's something there from that that like it. And you're right. It's like hard to pinpoint like exactly. That's why I don't think steampunk, because steampunk to me is like very industrial. And like, yeah. I said, it's not like there isn't cities and industry in here. There definitely is.
I think a lot of
there's airships and ports
comparison, maybe because of some of the weapons she uses in this, like that gun. I kind of see why people, I just thought it was weird. I kept hearing that word when I was doing some Google searches for it, but I'm kind of like you. I started reading this. I'm like, I don't see too much of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like light. It's yeah. I would, like I said, I think it's more like focus on fashion and like, I think architectural design, like a lot of like, Sana's like artwork. I think when you look in the backgrounds or like there's these intricate, you know, facades. I wish I had a better language tool to describe that type of work, but like, there's a lot of detail just in that, like very, I think ancient temple, you know, spiritual temple type stuff from like Japanese culture, and with a blend of like industry, you know, like I said, like Final Fantasy 12, but not to that steampunkiness that it probably that was. So yes, I think in the world, we're just getting exposed to the world. So to be fair, I haven't read everything. So maybe, you know, I get exposed to more things, I will, you know, say, oh, okay, that makes sense. But it's like, you can't like guess. It's like its own, like I said, I think it's its own distinct thing, and then try to label it, I think maybe does it a little bit disservice or puts you in a mindset that you might not expect. So that's the thing, expect the unexpected with this book. It's a very fun, cool book. So yeah, we sort of got a tease of, you know, the monster that's living inside of her. You know, we're going to get more and more exposure to that being, and get some answers here in the next podcast. But you know, yeah, I you know, like I said at the beginning, you know, sort of a different, you know, take on what we usually do here, which is like, hey, let's look at a book from the past that was very influential. But like, I can't, it seems like this book will definitely be, I think, decades to come, something that people look back on, especially with the Eisner Awards. Like, hey, this was the first Eisner Award for best writer that was, you know, given to a woman. You know, why was that? Well, like, you know, look at the work in this first 70-page issue. That's why. It's like, it's pretty cool. So, don't have much more to say about this. I guess I could talk about it forever, but man, I'm really excited actually to talk about the next couple issues, because holy cow, if you thought this was a wild ride, it just gets crazier and crazier the more that we learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I was just sitting here flipping through the end of the hardcover. Like, there's some like early sketches of the kaijus and stuff. But yeah, if you guys can find this hardcover, I highly recommend it. It's very high quality production from Image as usual.
Yep. Yeah. I think they probably do it the best. I mean, Marvel does it, kills it too. Like, what I like about Marvel, not to, you know, we're wrapping up here. Don't want to get too sidetracked, but like I just got like the Absolute Carnage and the Incredible Hulk Volume 2. And so you take off the slip covers and they have like actual illustrated hardcovers now. You know, and those are pretty cool. I like that approach.
Yeah. And I think the Spider-Gwen and the Mighty Thor, the Jane Foster one.
Oh, nice.
Started that trend as well. Those are really nice hardcovers.
Sweet. Awesome. All right. Well, hey, Carson, you know, you wrapped up your Halloween, bonanza. How did that go?
I'm so happy it's over. I'm going so much faster now that I'm not doing a video every day, but I'm so glad I did it and made it all the way through. Wrapped up with Arkham Asylum by Grant Morrison, Dave McKean. I'd never had read that book before, and it was pretty amazing. I out of all the things I read, I'd probably highly recommend that. And I actually read my first Golden Age horror book, so we're talking a little bit about Golden Age horror last time, so I finally got a chance to read one, and I definitely want to one day review a lot more Golden Age horror books, because it was definitely a different experience than, you know, reading anything nowadays. But I could see why people really love the Bronze Age of horror because of it, because that was such a throwback to those Golden Age ones I was reading. So I definitely want to dive more into that at some point. But yeah, I'm happy it's over, but I'm glad I did. It's one of those type of deals.
Nice. Yeah. So where can people check all that stuff out?
Oh, you can check out all the October reads. There's a playlist on youtube.com/CWoodard19 over on my YouTube channel. As well, I'm probably going to keep covering all of the TMNT and Last Ronin business that's been going on as well. And also, I believe we're having Turtle Talk Tuesday. This upcoming Tuesday on November 10th, we'll be reviewing TMNT IDW ongoing volumes. I believe it's we're up to 8 and 9 now, or 9 and 10. I've officially kind of lost track. But basically, we covered City Fall last time. We're going to cover their Southampton trip this time. And if you guys need reference for that, it's basically what the Turtles did in the movie where they had to hide from the Foot Clan and Shredder outside of New York. So I'm curious to see if it's going to be a series of filler issues or if it's going to be really good. It'll probably be really good because the whole run has been stellar so far.
Awesome. Yeah, I would love to read that stuff one day. I just feel like I don't have time. Or there's so much now that I need to go back and catch up on. I don't know what the best way to approach that is.
I would say it's at least really easy to check out the first trade. That's literally like four issues are the trades. Like they're really quick reads. Maybe read the first two together. So it'd probably be like eight issues. Comixology Unlimited has, I think, like the first five for free.
Cool.
So you can at least access the first two, which I highly recommend.
Like, awesome.
Oh, and then Comic Core, we're doing Modern Men every Monday, of course. The next couple Mondays, the first one coming up tomorrow as of this recording, we'll be talking about X-Men once again. It's our X-Men special part two, and we're going to be reviewing Days of Future Past. So that'll be great. And then the following week, we're going to be revisiting the Hulk because our reader poll, Victor, was the Hulk Future Imperfect by Peter David and George Perez. So I'm really looking forward to that one as well.
Awesome. Yeah, speaking of Turtles, that Last Ronin issue, if you're a Turtles fan, I feel like that's a must read. Seems like a very exciting thing to that. I'm very looking forward to the next issue of that. So, and people can find me anywhere at Raptors Revenge online, Instagram, Twitter, what have you. And I think that'll about do it this time. So it's good to be back. And to quote the poets, we'll see you next time.
Later.